Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, we're live. Right.
Hello,
right.
Facebook Live.
Hello, Facebook Live. Hello, the world via the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast.
Yeah, and the podcast is actually recording now as well.
Wow, this is incredible. We've got all our ducks in a line. It's almost like we're behaving one of the top 30 podcasts on earth as an accolade given to us by the Times.
And even more peculiar, you're here.
in person, in the flesh. Isn't it amazing?
It is. It's nice.
After a massive weekend of rugby, Phil's got his laptop on his knees with loads of stats. JB's got... is that a Sale T-shirt you got on?
No, it's not. It's a generic Canterbury polo shirt.
In Sale colours.
Coincidence.
And he's wearing socks for the benefit of anyone on Facebook Live. And yeah, I'm here, Tim. Let's do this. Let's get into this week's podcast then. Loads to talk about, what with the European Champions Cup quarter-finalists now decided moments ago. We're just recording this straight after the end of Toulouse-Connacht. So hands in, pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Well, thank you very much for listening to, downloading and choosing to be with us, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're just three mates that have been doing this for a few years, and we thank you very much for being with us and for leaving your review on iTunes. There's been loads of kind ones given this week. For example, this one. It says, great mix of personalities. JB, Jay from the Inbetweeners, in brackets.
Oh, that's nice.
Phil, Stephen Fry for the stats, in brackets. And Tim, Stifler from American Pie, in brackets.
That's a bizarre... I'm not going with that one.
It's a bit of a, I think all three of them are a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
They are slightly. It just says keep up the good work.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you. Love the podcast, says Johnny McFadden. Great rugby chat with light humour. Sounds like the chats you have with mates over a few drinks at the rugby club. That's what it's all about. We are fans. We've played the game. We love the game. And that's what we're here to do, is talk about it, and plenty to talk about. However, before we get into talking about the rugby and the European Champions Cup final round of matches in the pool stages and the quarterfinalists confirmed, we have been mentioning this for quite a while now, but confirmed, we are 100% going to Bucharest on the weekend of the 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, whatever that weekend, 17th, 18th, 19th of March.
That is correct. This is now confirmed, booked. We even have a venue for our live show. That is booked.
Yeah.
Further details to come.
So let's rewind a little bit. So we, like I think many, many rugby fans, get slightly frustrated by on a Six Nations weekend not being able to get tickets. The tickets, if you can get them, are priced incredibly highly, especially when you factor in travel, a few beers, a bit of food, all the rest of it. We are going to Romania because there is another big international game going on that weekend. Huge one, actually. In tier
it
two,
is huge.
In tier two, this is as big as it gets.
It really is.
But, I mean, so, it's probably. I mean, if this was in Georgia, it'd probably be a bigger crowd than some of the Italy games. So
yeah,
it's big.
Georgia, in their home games, they normally sell at 50,000 seat stadium. Unfortunately, this is a slightly smaller stadium. But the last 2 years of the tier two Six Nations.
Oh, it's Romania v Georgia, by the way.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, the last 2 years of the. Rugby Europe Championship.
JB just is pushing the microphone in Phil's face.
It's only been 3 years. It's only been 3 years of consistent mic distance.
And Jay still can't get the sound quality
right. Oh, whatever. Go on.
Yeah, last 2 years, Georgia and Romania have been the top two teams in the European Championship. This is the final round of games. It will probably be the deciding game in the Tier 2 Six Nations Championship, and we will be there.
We will be there, and so we know will a great number of people that have already been in touch with us to say they're coming on board as well. So flight, for example, let me just say I'm going from Stansted to Bucharest, and my flights, and I've even booked a seat on the front row.
So extra leg room.
Extra leg room and all that. And I thought on the way back especially, I'll just want to have a good nap.
Yeah, so just abuse the guy in the front row. Yeah. If you're boarding him, abuse that guy.
So I've booked with extra leg room, £75 return.
There you
that's
go.
That's paying for a case and paying for leg room. So it's cheap as chips. When you're out there, I don't know what the cost of living. How much is a beer in Bucharest?
I've just been looking up from less than a pound for a beer.
In a bar. Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So come and join us. We're going to do a live podcast.
Yeah, just, you know, we've already got about 50 people coming, so maybe don't rush too much to come.
No, come, sign up. We have set up a little Facebook page for the event.
We have, yeah, go to our Egg Chasers Facebook page, Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and there is the event, the Egg Chasers Live in Bucharest event.
I think it's going to be fun and messy and all kinds of good. Right, European Champions Cup then. Challenge Cup, I don't even know what the quarterfinals are.
No, the Challenge Cup was brilliant this week.
Yeah, no, I'm sure the games were great.
No, the games were terrible. The Challenge Cup was great, though. Yeah, the well, of course, there's the Hobby League and there's also Hobby Teams. So the Hobby League is obviously the Pro 12, a league that can't get itself together. And the Hobby Teams are obviously the teams in France, which have got all the resources in the world, yet they feed their players pastries. The Hobby Team, in this case, is Stade Francais, and they decided not to defrost their pitch. So this left Will Greenwood with an hour's worth of chats, and he did a fantastic job.
That's a tough gig, that, just talking for an hour. Like, I'm just imagining, knowing how it works, both from radio and TV, just there'd be someone in your ear going, yeah, just got another 10 minutes till break. Just keep going.
Yeah. I mean, fair play to the guy. I mean, he's an absolute professional because there was no sign of any terror, but as soon as the news came through...
You sound like Donald Trump.
as soon as the news came through, he started speaking much more slowly. And he came out with some absolute belting comments. So my personal favourite was describing Munster. He described Munster as, when people think of Munster, they think of only a team of only Conor Murray, only CJ Stander, only Simon Zeebo, only Peter O'Mahony. And people think, yeah, okay, that's a great list of only people. Then he spoke a little bit about Mike Tyson. Michael
did an impression of Mike Tyson.
He was going to go and do an impression of Mike Tyson, but he didn't. He spoke about the Champions League, a Royal Marine military strategy. That was fascinating. And Michael Johnson, the 200-meter runner. So an hour's worth of Will Greenwood. That should be commissioned into an actual show.
Michael Johnson's a very interesting character. He was helping Johnny May earlier this year.
He also used an analogy about ancient Rome to transition into a story about Jason Leonard. First time it's been done.
Wow.
Live on TV.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's our Challenge Cup roundup.
Yeah, good. So enjoy the quarterfinals, whoever they are and whenever they are. No, anyway.
Mm. Enjoy it if your team's in it.
Yeah, well, the one way they could change this instantly and overnight is if the winner of the Challenge Cup got a place in the Champions Cup.
Ooh.
I don't know why that isn't a thing. Get rid of the two Italian sides.
Yep.
Mm.
Then you can have equal numbers of teams from all the leagues, I believe. Is that right?
You still need 20 teams, so you'd have 6-6.
6-6-6 on merit, mm-hmm. not based on the nation you're at. You can have one playoff spot, which they currently have, and one that's the Challenge Cup winners.
Yeah.
Done.
There you go.
Easy.
And then you wouldn't have pools that ended like pool two, which was Wasps 22 points, Toulouse 18 points, Connacht 18 points, Zebre 0 points, minus 259 points difference.
Yeah, it's embarrassing, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
There's some talk about Italy potentially going down to one team in Rome.
So I heard they were moving the team.
Well, they are. Zebre's winding up and they're starting a new one in Rome is the
yeah.
talk.
Yeah, and I heard two things. One, they were going to have two teams but move one of them. And the other was they were going to have one team and then have another European nation muted to be Georgia as a Jaguares-style, effectively international team.
Well, Italy would be the same, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Who would they play?
It could be.
Like, who would their? What would they be called? The Georgian Jaguares. Who would they play? What competition?
Pro 12.
The Snow Leopards.
Snow Leopards. Ooh.
The Mountain Lions.
Yeah.
The Yaks. Something like that. Yaks.
Yeah. Yaks.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, yak, yeah, it's double meaning. Yard after contact.
Yes.
Something like this, they kind of rush away, aren't they? Something to do with bears.
Yeah.
Ooh. Grizzlies. Georgia Grizzlies.
I think that's American.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's a good idea, though. Yeah. I'm fully in favour of that, if they can get it going.
As for the quarterfinals themselves, we now know, obviously, the 1-2-8, and you will know by now, and the fixtures will be, Philip. It's Clermont v Toulon.
Yes.
Leinster host Wasps.
Wasps. Saracens host Glasgow.
Yeah.
And Munster host Toulouse.
Wow.
Now, tasty.
Yeah. That's hell of a lot of fixtures there.
Two English teams, three French teams, and three Pro 12 teams.
Yes, correct.
So the hobby league's done all right.
Well, yeah, but the hobby league's still terrible. Like I say, the teams in it are fine. The league is horrible.
Well, it's interesting. We had a few tweets about this. So if you're just joining the podcast recently, maybe you saw the Times article. I don't think we've mentioned it yet, but we were one of the 30 best podcasts in the world.
Were we?
According to the Times. I think so. Yeah. I'm surprised you haven't framed the article
yet,
I
have, Jamie.
No, if you're just... So the hobby league is a reference to the fact that the bottom half of the Pro 12 is pretty dire, and the top teams are really, really good, and they don't put out their best players in matches, all the rest of it. But actually, when you look at the Avicii Premiership this year, beyond the top four, the quality of the Avicii Premiership looks much, much worse, relatively speaking, than it has done.
Do you know what, Tim?
It does.
Big drop-off.
No, do you know what? It just isn't, though. And that is the reality of the situation. People like say, oh, well, Newcastle wouldn't do well, you know, in the Pro 12. They would only finish 12th or whatever it is. No, not true. I mean, Newcastle have a fairly strong squad now. They're playing good rugby. They have a plastic pitch, for God's sakes. Whereas Dragons nearly had to call off a game because the pitch was a complete mess.
But how many...
You know,
Sale,
with nothing on the line, beat Scarlets this weekend.
With nothing on the line.
Yeah, so it's a good test.
It's
an equal test.
What else is a good test? How many hobby league teams have gone down 43-0 at home to Glasgow?
Well, this is quite an amazing result, actually.
Yeah, I think we should start there because it's seismic that result, and I've never seen before. And my observation from being at Welford Road, I've never seen Leicester Tigers fans leaving.
No, I've not
in numbers before the final whistle.
No,
it was remarkable.
Well,
humiliating, embarrassing—all the adjectives you want to throw at it.
Well, Glasgow are a funny team for me because, yeah, they do everything well. They've got a good coaching setup. They've got a nice little campus going on in Scotstoun, or whatever you want to call it. And I kind of thought they might have plateaued. Like, the Gregor Townsend approach to playing rugby might have been figured out by some of the other Pro 12 teams. Maybe, although they've got all that Scottish talent, it wasn't quite top-end talent. And that's why they got to the Pro 12 final, they win the Pro 12, but then last year Have Leinster won it in the meantime, or has it been Connacht?
Connacht won it in the meantime. Connacht beat Glasgow in the semi-final.
I thought maybe they've plateaued, and maybe they're on a little bit of a down... Not a downturn, but maybe they've just steadied out. No. Emphatically not. So,
And it wasn't just the attacking stuff that they brought, which they did bring.
Yeah.
But they scored a pushover try, penalty try. Again, their breakdown is fierce.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Without the ball.
They're tactically very, very astute, too. A lot of nonsense was made up last week about attacking Conor Murray's standing leg, which is fine. I just think it's tactically...
Well, a lot of nonsense was made was said by Conor Murray.
Yeah,
about Glasgow players tackling legally on the fringes,
which tells me that's a really effective tactic. If he's whinging about it, that's a really effective tactic.
Well, the suggestion from some people at Munster was that Glasgow were trying to injure his leg. They were just trying to put off a massive part of Munster's tactical kicking game by getting right at Conor Murray, diving at him.
Yeah,
and that's fine. And if Conor Murray, if your forward pack don't stand in the way and block, if you don't decide sometimes not to kick rather than kick and get smashed, then that's the whole point. That's rugby.
I just think it shows a much more tactically aware team than we've seen in current Glasgow sides. The only downside, and this is more of a personal downside, would be Finn Russell. Finn Russell played a marvellous game, but will his kicking cost him? And I feel it might. And when I say will it cost him, I mean in terms of line selection, though. So I'm not talking about the Glasgow performance as a whole, because that was excellent.
What's his kicking like generally? Because I'd be loath to make a judgment on one match, because if you did that, then George Ford a couple of weeks ago shouldn't be the England 10 because he had a bad day.
You make a good point. George Ford arguably wouldn't be the England 10 if Farrell couldn't play 12.
If they had an inside centre, Farrell would probably be the starting 10.
Yeah. But you get my point.
He's kicking, yeah. He was 67%. He got 5 out of 6 conversions, but missed a few penalties.
In a 43-0 win.
Yeah.
Which he orchestrated his back line.
Yes. Majestically. Yeah, but he needs to kick points. And that's important. Unless they go with Lee Halfpenny or someone.
Well, Gatland might go with Lee Halfpenny. I think any other coach...
No, he won't.
I think
I think any other coach wouldn't, but Gatland has got form. Successful last time. Although Halfpenny's kicking of late hasn't been great.
Well, that's why Farrell's going to be starting 10 for the Lions.
Probably.
Maybe. Or bigger. the thing with Lee Halfpenny, right, is he's absolutely world-class. Maybe the best in the world at some things. And he marries these up to things which I could do better. So, for instance, he's world class at positioning. He's world class at kicking. He's very brave. He's good at cover tackling.
Yeah, all of those things. He's
maybe the best in the world.
Top three, probably. Yeah. Top three, top five, definitely.
And then you've got his distribution. Mm-hmm. It's one of the worst kept secrets that he can't really pass a ball.
You often get players who can't pass off one hand. He's a player who can't pass off either hand.
Like, he has got some glaring weaknesses, but his strengths are so great. His positioning effectively allows Wales to play with one fullback and push up their wings.
Or select someone like Cuthbert who doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
So it might be a bit, again, maybe Gatland knows stuff we don't, and maybe the way to beat New Zealand is to have a winger that just runs into touch.
I'd be amazed if Gatland knows stuff that we don't. No, I'd be amazed if he didn't know stuff that we didn't.
So he does know stuff. Yeah, okay.
Yes, good.
Glasgow mixed it up. It was forward play, it was back play, and we're not going to get into the situation of trying to undermine how good that performance was.
No,
it was a complete team performance. It was absolutely phenomenal.
Brilliant.
I want Maro Itoje to play for England in the back row, because Johnny Gray just is his work rate's immense.
But wait,
Fraser Brown at hooker, love him as
yes.
well.
Yes, a lot of people like him.
He's good, isn't he?
The interesting thing about that is you just said Johnny Gray. Why not Tim Swinson?
Because he's not Johnny Gray.
Yeah, but he's had, what, 2 man a match back-to-back? He carries on playing well?
Okay.
Well, Lions Bolter?
No.
No.
There's so much depth in that position.
There is, but if he's if he's in the same team as Johnny Gray, he gets a call up to the Scotland team. It's not a million miles away, you know?
Well, he's third choice for Scotland. I'd say there's 3 English locks ahead. Well, no, there's 2 Scottish locks ahead of him. Mm-hmm. There's probably 4 English locks ahead of him.
There's Alan Wynne.
Maybe five. And probably 2. so you've got about 10 players ahead of him.
So no. But you know, maybe book a holiday to Australia and take your boots with you.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Just in case.
Australia, New Zealand, sorry.
You're close enough in Australia.
I think that's what lads did, didn't they? They go to nice places which are close by.
Yeah. We could probably get... There'd probably be quite a good Lions team made up of people that happen to be on holiday nearby. Tom Court, for example.
Yeah. Shane Williams.
Yeah.
Billy 12 Trees.
Yeah.
Brad Barrett.
Oh, who was the prop? There's another prop, wasn't there? It wasn't Tom Court, it was someone else.
Tom Court did, because Tom Court is
Jarvis
Australian.
Or someone?
I can't remember.
I'm sure there's another prop that went on holiday and got called up.
Not sure.
There was probably half a dozen who got called up mid-tour last time.
And how does that work? Is there like a WhatsApp group and they say, where are you? And whoever's nearest...
Gatland, adding Billy 12 Trees to Lion WhatsApp group.
First come, first serve.
Send us a location pin, closest wins.
Or maybe it's just whoever gets to the hotel foyer first and books the room gets the kit. Right, so Glasgow were outstanding. Leicester, that was abject. It was... I'm not going to use words like spineless. That's not fair because I think the effort was there. They tried.
There was? Yeah, there was some endeavour, wasn't there?
There was plenty of effort, but there's big problems there. And obviously what some Leicester Tigers and some other commentators around will start saying is clearly there were bigger problems and the problem wasn't Richard Cockerell.
Yeah, well, you know, I think we've established that. Oh, you know, maybe the problem was Cockerell and, you know, this is just the
legacy.
Aftermath.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I kind of put this a little bit like, did you when London Irish went down last year? You know, we were lucky enough to meet some of the team. And these were not guys that weren't trying hard in the same way that Leicester Tigers aren't trying hard. They're not just throwing it away. But you would say that London Irish team looked a little out of sorts, a little clueless after a couple of phases. And that's exactly what I think has happened at Leicester. They look absolutely clueless. You give them the ball for two or three phases and it just goes to pot.
Well, they need to keep the ball for two or three phases first.
yes, that's not a bad shout.
But they just... I just think all the problems we've talked about before, so we don't need to go into it again, but... no gain line successes, therefore scrappy ball in your own attacking breakdown, disrupted, therefore the ball that you're shoveling on is poor. And again, the other problems that we've talked about, how much as a percentage of their salary cap is not available to them regularly. Iurza, Mulapola, Tuilagi, Croft, massive paychecks that they just haven't got value for. And as we've talked about before, part of that is Richard Cockerell's responsibility and decisions he's made and recruitment and all the rest of it. So, anyway, it's going to take longer to sort out than changing a coach.
What's the first thing that you'd do, Tim?
I would say thank you very much for your service. Mulapola, Iurza, Tuilagi, Croft, and a number of other players that are a bit long in the tooth. Maybe even Tom Youngs with the hookers that they've got available to them. Mm-hmm. I know he's a big club man. I don't want to say... But I'm just talking about squeezing value. You've got three really good hookers. McGuigan and Thacker are great.
And
you're probably spending 300 odd grand on Tom Youngs.
I thought Thacker was going to Worcester.
There's been some rumours, okay. But Aaron Major really likes him. And
I'm sure you could retain him, particularly if Tom Youngs goes.
Yeah. So that's what... So that's maybe what I would do. And I'd try and get an amazing fly half, someone like George Ford.
But not happening for another year or so.
That's what I'd do.
Talk, you know, you mentioned last week and this week gain line successes. Do you know who beat the most defenders for the Leicester team this week?
Tom Brady.
Nope. Tom Brady, defenders beaten, zero.
So he's... Okay. So top, joint top.
He's not a million miles away.
Jack Roberts.
Jack Roberts, defenders beaten, zero.
Oh my word.
Ellis Genge,
reserve loose head prop, top scored with three defenders beaten.
Wow.
And he got a yellow card at the time he was on.
Oh, by the way, that yellow card was so obvious.
Yeah, he was about to explode, wasn't he?
They probably did him a favour.
Because if he'd stayed on for another few minutes, it would have been a red card.
I don't know how Leicester Tigers get over this. I really don't. Because it's so demoralising.
This game is huge, but I just wonder, are we being too reactionary? Are we putting too much effort on what was... I know it's at home, and I know it's European, but a nothing game for Leicester, and Glasgow, who had the most to do to secure their quarter-final spot.
There was definitely a danger of that, and I think if we were reactionary... I think the reactionary time was post-first game at Munster. And everyone goes, oh my God, it's over. And then they go and beat...
Glasgow. Leicester.
Oh, no, Munster, when they were nilled. They got battered up in Glasgow.
Yeah, they were
battered in Munster. They beat...
Can I just point out, I was at all three of... Yeah. I was working at all three of those games that they got absolutely spanked at.
A curse, perhaps?
Yeah, so for you, actually, this is standard Leicester fare, isn't it?
This is standard
Leicester. You've never seen them play well.
No.
But then, you know, there's a little pickup of form. They ditched the director of rugby and now they are tanking points. I mean, their defence is also terrible.
Well, we've got a couple of weeks before the Premiership returns. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that. And I imagine there might be other stories emerging, players in, players out, coaches in, coaches out in the coming weeks. We will wait and see. What other quarterfinal did you enjoy, Phil? Not quarterfinal, sorry, the final round.
The final game, yeah, because quite a few of them were effectively knockout games. On the same day, just before the Leicester game, Saracens Toulon. It's not a high-scoring game. It's 10-3 finished. But I think the low-scoring points does not give a true reflection of how big this game was, how monumental. The performance by both teams
was brutal.
It was brilliant. As near as you can get to test match intensity for the majority of the game.
Can I just mention on that one, sorry, before you go on, I have actually got some exclusive, obviously I'm on the kind of inside working on the television, with the television broadcaster there. I've got some inside audio that hasn't been heard before of the moment that Alex Lazowski was tackled by Mathieu Bastiero. fair play, Alex Lazowski, getting up from that.
He's a tough guy.
That hit was incredible. Ooh. And it perfectly legal, timed so well. It is a bit of a dangerous game because Lazowski was spinning. He was half tackled and he was spinning. He comes into it completely blind.
Ooh.
Just starts to accelerate after spinning and Bastiero levels it.
I'm not sure there's a worse player in the world to run into in that situation.
Well, what I would say about Bastiero is at least he's a little bit soft around the edges. At least if that was Marlon Nonno, it'd just be muscle and
bone.
Do you
know what? There's nothing soft about that when it's hitting you that fast.
Oh, the closing speed.
I can't remember what phrase the... was it Ali Eakin, the commentator, said was...
like having a cow dropped on you.
It's a kind of tackle that makes you taste your fillings.
Yeah, O'Driscoll said
O'Driscoll, your bod. It was great.
Ooh, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah, sorry, you were saying, Phil.
Well, just about the game, it was very, very good, very high standard. Toulon came out so fast. They started so well, and they did fade condition and fitness, we spoke about before. But first 15, 20 minutes, I thought,
well, let's talk first 15, 20 seconds, two is over. Oh God. Oh.
Yeah, that wins it, almost.
Have you ever, have you ever completely butchered something in a really embarrassing fashion?
I've never dropped the ball over the try line.
Oh, hang on a minute, Phil. You haven't dropped the ball over on a try line. The only time I've ever played rugby with you, though, our only pro, our only guy who's getting paid, our only guy who's playing national leagues on the wing, sevens, you were there, he's in for a try, he scores, go through, he somehow got caught.
Yeah.
He somehow got caught.
Phil Winger, national league winger, social sevens, got caught.
I'd scored 6 tries in 3 games, and I've been carrying you layabouts.
That's what you're there for. Yeah.
And I resent that. I was in the middle orchestrating things like Andy Goode did with Newcastle last year. That was my role in that side.
I'm sure I must have. I know I've butchered things which have been given, which is kind of the opposite, isn't it? So I know they've definitely not been tries. I knocked on from the base of a scrum once and I just needed to tap it down. That was given as a try.
I've done it. I've done something embarrassing. I was at the back of a ruck. In fact, I was playing number 8 in this particular game, and I picked up from the base at scrum about halfway between the 22 and the try line, and I broke off to the right, managed to get outside the blindside flanker and sort of handed off the winger that was stepping in, and reached for the try line, planted the ball perfectly over the 5-metre line.
I know I've told you this story before, but it's worth telling you again. I was playing school rugby, and I was meant to go into a ruck, and I didn't. And the reason I didn't is because one of the guys carrying the ball, and we were in these baggy old like cotton rugby tops.
Oh, I love those old rugby jerseys.
Oh, yeah, with
a patch on the back with your number on.
No, I mean they would have had a patch if we were wearing numbers, but we weren't because they were just house jerseys. And this guy got tackled, and as he got tackled, the tackling player ripped the jersey, which would come off, over his head, but at the same time he also ripped off his scrum hat. I was convinced that this guy had been decapitated. And I just stood there in horror looking at this ruck and this guy holding a scrum hat looking like he's got someone's head. You're looking, Beardmore, get in there. It's horrible. I never want to see a decapitated man on a rugby field ever again.
I do remember a game actually where there was a penalty and I was standing behind the post but just to the right of the posts, so not through the middle, and they missed the penalty. So I went to the in-goal area at Sedgley's like 20 metres deep.
Yeah,
so
it's
you
big,
can't let you can't let it bounce and go out. So I went to catch it, no one around me, and dropped it and knocked the ball on. But 5 metre scrum.
I thought the rule was you can't forward pass or knock on in your own dead ball. I've heard that rule a few times. I've never actually looked it up though.
Well, the 5 metre scrum was definitely given.
You can't what knock on the ball after
in your own dead ball.
No, that's not true.
The reason I heard that,
no, that's
and
not
I've
true.
Never read it up, so it, I mean, it doesn't sound right. The reason I say that is, do you remember Will Greenwood did it? So something happened, and Will Greenwood, instead of waiting for the whistle, caught the ball and he passed it forward to the ref, so the ref could give a scrum, something like that, or he didn't touch it down. And I'm sure one of the commentators said, actually, you can do that. There are no forward passes in your own dead ball.
I know the one thing you can do in the dead ball area, which you can't do in the rest of the field, is be stood out in touch or out in goal and score a try. You can be stood with both your feet off the field, touch the ball.
That's
down,
right, yeah, you can.
And it's a try.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Christian Wade did it.
Christian Wade did it. Whereas if you do it with your feet in touch and play the ball, it's a line-out.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah. Toulon, much better. Saracens seem quite depowered by the players they're losing.
Massively.
Yeah.
And this is the important thing, I think. So, yeah, it was an equal battle. Saracens eventually were victorious. But I, you know, if I was Toulon, I think I'd be very disappointed with this. I think Saracens were there for the taking, and they couldn't do it. And I think one of the things that they lack is
basic fitness. Before you say that, do you know the last away game Toulon won?
Ooh.
It was against.
It'll be against one of the like Oyonnax or
Sale.
It was against Sale.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, back in what?
And they weren't convinced.
November.
Yeah, yeah,
October, November. That's the last away game they've won.
Does anyone know who makes Toulon's kit?
It is not Birda. That's Northampton.
It used to be Birda, didn't it? Birda Sports. I don't know.
It's bad anyway.
I actually quite like it.
Mm.
But I can't even tell you the name. I just know the logo is a single H.
Not yeah. Halbro, that company Halibro. From Oldham.
Halbro.
I'm not sure, but it's just a single H. I thought, don't know them.
No, don't know them. Other quarterfinals. Well, let's go through the other games that mattered. Then again, apologies if your team's game's not getting discussed, but Sale versus Scarlets, for example.
No, that's a good game. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, no.
Go on.
Didn't matter.
Go on. I've got half an hour worth of notes here.
No, but what...
The Will Addison try was good. You see that?
It was a good try.
It's a cracking try.
But no. It
and they won finally. First one in nine?
First one in ten. Nine straight defeats.
I think the most encouraging thing is AJ McGinty played okay, but he still misses kicks.
And some of his handling is not great.
Yeah, and some of his taking the ball to the line isn't great.
We've already
either.
Taken too much time. The Friday night's fixtures.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Cast drawing 24-all with Leinster.
Didn't see it.
I was backing Leinster to get the win. Not that it matters because they're through anyway. But the other game, Montpellier-Northampton, which Montpellier did have a chance, and they gave themselves a chance by getting the four tries. Obviously, they've not quite made it through. But this game was all about one man.
Yeah, and I've actually got another bit of sound which this is of...
Is this genuine too?
This is genuine, completely 100% wow. genuine. Never heard before footage from a special side of the pitch camera and mic. This is Nemanja Nandolo running over George North.
I love the ambulance coming in.
Problem with this one, right, is that he didn't really... I mean, George North didn't do anything, really.
Yeah, George North
it was
did not...
Like,
fancy.
Tag.
What,
is everyone else he ran over?
No, there was one comment I read, which was really funny, which said... Hold on, I'll find it. The comment I read at the time on Twitter, which said, George North looked like a man deciding between making a proper tackle or getting another concussion. And someone else said North's effort was terrible. No wonder he gets concussed so much. Another comment on Nandolo. Like I know Phil, you'll go on about this. I liked in addition to all the brilliant things about him and his play, he has a little muffin top, which I appreciate. He has a little muffin top over the top of his shorts.
I do appreciate that a little bit less. But when he's 20 stone and 6 foot five and can run that fast,
yeah.
I don't really. Do you see his offload for the? What I think was their first try. Was it Jacques Duplessis who went in? The round-the-back offload was phenomenal.
To be honest, I can't remember much of this game. I was in a bloody bad state by this point on Friday.
Oh, yeah, because you went to the rugby league game,
didn't you?
You
went to a rugby league game at a naval...
Yeah.
thing.
I was invited to watch London Scholars.
Did Mike Ford and any of the Toulon boys turn up in the end?
No, Mike Ford didn't come in the end because apparently he's under quite a lot of pressure.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, so he didn't want to be seen doing other
honourable
stuff. But actually, it was a great day out. In the Honourable Artillery Company, London Scholars played Wigan.
Loads of free booze.
We set off from Manchester at 9:30 train. By the time we just got past Stockport, we were halfway through our first bottle of Prosecco.
So we had it's 10 minutes.
Yeah.
10 minutes.
it's rules, mate. So yeah, it was a heavy old shift, and then it was good. So,
go on then.
Just on Nadolo.
Yeah.
So I've pulled out some of his stats from this game. Obviously mentioned the Ellis Genge stats. His stats for the game. So he carried for 176 meters. He beat 13 defenders and made 6 clean breaks.
Wow.
Now, to put that into perspective.
Yes.
In the Aviva Premiership.
Avicii Premiership.
Not in any single game. In the season to date, Kempisi, in 9 appearances, has beaten the same number of defenders.
Yep.
Sean Maitland, in 9 appearances, has made the same number of clean breaks. And Jamie Roberts, in 7 appearances, has made fewer metres.
Wow.
Wow, indeed.
That's quite incredible.
Yeah.
I was just saying this about Sean Maitland. I like Sean Maitland a lot as a player.
I do.
But it does feel like he needs a lot of space in order to operate to his full potential.
Yeah.
He looks like he's trying to start like an actual 100-metre sprint.
Wow.
He's that kind of athlete.
I suppose the final game to talk about then would be the Munster one.
Yeah.
And, well, just good, solid again from them.
Yeah, I don't think
CJ Sander with another man of the match.
Yeah, CJ Sander's excellent. Yeah. Conor Murray's excellent. Yada, yada, yada. The bit I quite liked about this is actually there was quite a lot of pride shown by Racing. It would be easy for them to roll over.
Yeah.
And they didn't, in fairness. It made a competitive sport, a sort of competitive spectacle.
Compared to the other game in that group, obviously, the Leicester-Glasgow game. So, yeah, fair play to Racing.
I wonder how much of that was kind of, let's not let Ronan Ogora down when he comes home. It must have played some part in it.
Yeah, it's an easy team talk, isn't it?
Yeah. And also, with some of the second string, particularly in the pack, as it was against Leicester in Paris, the second string performing quite well, actually, it probably gave some of the frontline players a bit of a rocket. Like, your spot isn't...
Yeah.
Tell you who I really like for Munster, and you can tell me more about him. And I'm not sure if he is getting much recognition for the national team. Is Conway on the wing? I love his work rate. Every time that there's a ball in the air, you can guarantee that Conway's underneath it somewhere, or you know, within the general location.
I don't think he's near the team at the moment. I certainly don't think he's in the squad.
Yeah, well, he's certainly you don't put him in the same kind of category as Tommy Burr or someone like that. But he does work incredibly hard.
Topping that pool, and as we are several months on from Axel Foley's death, I don't think any suggestion that this isn't the real deal and going to last from Munster. I don't think... This is it in the real deal, and they're...
They're very organised, aren't they?
They're very organised, looking set fair.
Toman Park is...
Yeah, they've booked a home quarter final, which is massive.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge. And they've got Toulouse, which will match up pretty well to them because they've got that big, supremely well-drilled pack.
Yeah. The Munster matchday programme for their game against Racing had a Q&A with their prop, Dave Kilcoyne, who was on the bench but played quite a lot of the game due to an injury to one of the props.
You're gone.
There were normal questions in this Q&A, things like, what are you currently reading? And he's reading I Am Zlatan, all that kind of stuff. But there was one question I thought I'd bring to your attention, which I thought you'd appreciate. They said, when you finish rugby, what would you like to do? Dave Kilcoyne, Munster prop, says, I would like to, and this sounds like a five-year-old boy writing it.
Astronaut.
I would like to become CEO of Munster, own my own nightclub or restaurant, whilst also moonlighting as mayor of Limerick.
Wow. Hey, aim big.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing wrong with that.
Reach for the stars.
Too right.
You can do
I've
it.
I've got some stupid questions to ask, just very quickly.
Go on.
So, Cronin the hooker, he has got to be the brother of Cronin the prop, yeah?
Possibly. I don't know.
All right, okay. So, question number two. Scannell the hooker has to be the brother of Scannell the centre.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Omani the wing, brother of Omani the flanker?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Someone needs to tell us.
Just wondering.
And there's also the bad carny and the good carny.
Yeah, bad carny and good carny.
Remember there was a time when bad carny and good carny were in the Irish back three.
Yeah.
They haven't got to do that anymore, have they?
Oh, and the last one is Johnny Gray. Sorry. And what's the other one?
Talai Gray.
And Talai Gray. They've got to be brothers, right?
Yeah, they're brothers.
Johnny Gray and Talai Gray.
Yeah, that's right.
The third Gray brother.
Yeah, that's right.
I think they are half brothers.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
It is kind of like asking Scott Williams and Liam Williams and Shane Williams.
Yeah,
they're all the same, aren't they?
Yeah, I think Scannell and Cronin, they've got to be brothers.
Maybe.
Yeah. Cronin's are not brothers.
Oh, we're getting that on Facebook Live.
Yeah, Facebook Live just pitched in. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. At Rugby Podcast.
Omani's not brothers.
Not
come on,
brothers.
Give me the last one.
But Talai Gray and Johnny Gray are definitely brothers.
Johnny Gray and Talai Gray are brothers. Yeah, I've just had it confirmed.
But some people think Richie is, but he's just a second cousin.
Yes, exactly right. Do you want to...
Oh, we should say, right, so that we have Prouder Ulsterman as a prefix for Pride Ulsterman as a prefix for Ulster's rugby team.
Yeah.
Brave Connacht. Brave is getting banded around a lot about Connacht.
They were very brave. I really wanted them to do this. And then they were only 3 points off as well.
Yeah. Shame. Shame.
Yes. And even that last penalty, you see them given both ways. The penalty for holding on by Connacht, which was a Toulouse player not supporting his own body weight.
Mm.
Frustrating.
Now, when you talk about this during the game, there's far too many penalties, I think, who are kind of soft holding on the ball penalties. And what I mean by that is the defending team just need to basically touch the ball with both hands and it's a penalty.
Yeah.
And they're not really considering, you know, how much force are they pulling that ball up with. It's almost like touch. Like, you've got to touch the ball with both hands and then it's a penalty.
But the player is supposed to release on the ground. But he's supposed to be given an opportunity to release. Yeah, so as long as he's given the opportunity to release, then if a player can touch the ball, he should be able to pick it up.
Can I ask about that?
The problem is, though, for me, it's the not supporting your own body weight.
Yeah. I don't think we should go too much into this. We've got to remember, we have got two fallow weeks before Six Nations with Anglo-Welsh Cup.
Is it two? I can't wait.
Is it not only 1 week?
It's only 1 week. We have next week a bit of a fallow week. We'll be building up to the Six Nations, obviously, but we can pick up a sort of any other business. But there's some big meaty topics to get into, like residency rules.
Yeah.
I've got a rugby social as well. In fact, should I do a rugby social?
Yeah, do that.
All right. So we know how much rugby players love their Twitter accounts, mainly to just try and blag free stuff.
Mm.
Northampton this week, I couldn't believe the number of players were tweeting about coconut water.
Oh, really?
Just constantly. Like, if you're going to try and blag something...
Not coconut water.
Blag something good.
Bentley's or something.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. Anyway, so from my options, you have to guess what the answers are in relation to the Twitter social media antics of some rugby players. So London Irish's Luke Narraway was getting very nostalgic this week about which TV show he loved in his childhood. Was it SpongeBob SquarePants?
Mm.
Was it Whackaday? Was it The Shoe People? Phil, you can go first on this one.
Whackaday.
Never even heard of Whackaday. I think he's too old for SpongeBob. But he's too young for Shoe People.
He's saying Shoe People. The answer, Luke Narraway was getting very nostalgic about... I'll tell you what, I'll play the theme tune of the show that he loved as a kid.
It's got Shoe People. Yeah, there you go. Very good.
Where's the... I don't remember the theme tune being so long and boring.
Oh, no, but I do now.
Anyway, he tweeted that theme tune and was going on about how good it was, a TV show it was. Anyway,
I tell you what, whoever invents, like, children's TV shows, I think this about children's TV shows and nursery workers, eventually there's going to be a class action lawsuit because I'm sure that their minds rot. They just have to. Mm.
game. 1-0 to JB. Question two. Big Luth, Luther Burrell, was delighted to meet one of his heroes this week. But who was it? Was it a well-known MMA fighter, a well-known house DJ, or a well-known TV chef? You go first, JB.
Oh, house DJ. Ugh.
Has he met DJ James Haskell?
I think it's an MMA fighter. Although, who would it be? In Northampton.
You've given your answer, Phil.
MMA fighter. Oh, it's going to be house DJ, isn't it?
Well,
sakes.
So I know he's from his various social media accounts that he's been in Dubai this last week with his pregnant wife. So I'm going to say a TV chef. Or chef.
You're both wrong. It's a house DJ.
House DJ.
Ask.
Tweet from, not James Haskell, tweet from Big Luth says, nice surprise visit from the king of house music. Do you know this name? Simon Dunmore. Great to see you, Si. Apparently him, Stephen Myler and Harry Mallinder shared some time with Simon Dunmore, a house DJ. Sounds like Simon Dunmore, accountant. Would be more.
Well, I mean, house DJ. I mean, is that just a resident DJ at a bar?
I've no idea.
No, it's a type of music, isn't
Simon
it?
Simon Dunmore's.
House chef or house.
House wine.
Yeah, house wine.
I'll just have a glass
this
of
is
the house.
Resident house DJ.
Simon Dunmore's Twitter bio says, slave to the rhythm.
Sounds like your kind of guy.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Jay.
I'm really into rhythm.
Right, so it's still 1-0 to Jay. One more question. Which national day did Quinn's winger Tim Visser think his teammate Mike Brown would appreciate?
Sorry?
Would love. Which national... I'll give you the options. Which national day? You know, everyone goes, oh, today is national... Don't wear socks on Facebook Live videos week.
See what you see, Tim.
So which national day did Tim Visser think Mike Brown would love? It was on January 21st. So it was January 21st.
So a national day, right, is the day for a nation...
No. It's like
or
like
a bank holiday.
Charities like or a national organizations will say, oh, it's national Save and Prosper Twickenham Seat Appreciation Day.
Righto.
I'm just saying
what I see.
What
about like Pancake Day?
Pancake Day. There you go. There's one.
Something like that.
Anyway, Tim Visser saw that January the 21st was a particular day and said, Mike Brown, you'll love this. Was he referring to Omelette Appreciation Day? Was he referring to Calm Headedness Appreciation Day? Or was he referring to Squirrel Appreciation Day?
I'm going to say Omelette Appreciation Day.
Calm Headedness. If I was going to make up a gag about this, I'd go with Calm Headedness.
Which is exactly why I put it as one of my red herrings.
Ah!
It's Squirrel Appreciation Day.
Bitten by my own snake.
Why do you think Mike Brown loves squirrels or... Why do you think Tim Visser thinks Mike Brown loves squirrels? I'm trying to work this out. I don't know.
So maybe he's a very
more
keen,
information.
He's a very keen saver.
Acorns.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Squirreling money away, that kind of thing.
Hmm.
I don't think of anything else that a squirrel really represents.
I know that our local butcher goes into the local park just at the end of the road and shoots squirrels and then gives them out for free. Mm. He does it with all sorts of wildlife. He offers you a free squirrel.
Does he skin it, or do you have to skin it yourself?
No, that's part of the deal. If you get a free goose off him, free kind of the goose something, you've got to
skin it yourself.
You've got to pluck it yourself.
Free pheasants, all sorts. Mm. Anywho, there you go. Rugby Social JB1.
Yeah, well done. Well done, JB.
Thanks, mate.
England squad. Eddie Jones's England squad. And there was a Wales squad as well. But let's start with the England squad. Any surprises or any omissions or anyone you would want to see out or in of Eddie Jones's squad? What do you make of it in general?
So we previously had the 33-man training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Three players have dropped out and four players have come in.
Okay.
Can you tell me the players who dropped out?
Of the previous 33-man training squad?
Yeah. Two through injury, one through presumably form, although he didn't play this weekend.
Not Rocco. He wasn't in it last
year. No, he wasn't. He was in the wider 45-man squad.
Mm. I have no idea. Obviously
Robshaw's dropped out.
Robshaw's out
through injury. The Vunipola's out through injury.
They weren't in it. They were already out.
Oh, okay.
Mike Williams in, of course.
He was in it last time.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. Because Billy...
Luke, he only has two hookers or two scrum halves. Two scrum halves, so one of the scrum halves. So Robson or Simpson?
They were already in the wider squad. Spencer was in the 45, but not in the...
Okay.
So the two who dropped out through injury, Robshaw and Manu. And then the only other one was Beaumont, who has been replaced by Clifford.
Yeah.
Oh, has he?
Yeah.
Won't be happy about that.
And so the guys coming in were Clifford, Slade comes in for Manu... Launchbury's in, so they've got five second rows, although Itoje's probably going to be considered as a back row, and Ellis Genge comes in.
How excited are you about Itoje in the back row?
Interested to see it. I think particularly in the winter months, when it's colder and wetter, great stuff. Potentially you might lose a little something. When the game opens out a little bit.
If I was Warren Gatland, I'd be delighted from a Lions perspective, because I think...
Yes.
Yeah.
Trying to accommodate all those... Alan Wynn, Johnny Gray...
Well, the point I
George
made
Cruz.
Is...
Tim Swinson.
The person... yeah, Tim Swinson. The person who's most delighted about the potential move of Itoje to the back row are Alan Wynne-Jones's captaincy hopes. Because if he's out the way... It's a fairly clear walkthrough.
Do you know what I think Warren Gatland will do that, probably Alan Wynn. However, and Eddie Jones even said in a really interesting article in The Guardian this week that he thinks Warren Gatland will pick Alan Wynne-Jones as captain.
Very different from saying as Eddie Jones would pick him as captain.
If I were Warren Gatland, I wouldn't pick a captain. I would pick a captain a couple of weeks before the first test.
I agree with you, actually. I agree with this whole horse. I don't like the idea of a club captain. I think you should pick captains week to week. But this would be going against all manner of tradition.
Yeah, I know. And the as much as anything, you can imagine that the sponsors wouldn't like it because they want to get their picture of the captain and all that and the press
conference.
Media
time,
What about a leadership group? Would you be happy with that?
That's what I would do. Because I don't think there's any candidate that can guarantee their space in the team.
No. Now, does this talk to a lack of good leadership candidates or massive strength in depth?
Massive strength in depth in both.
Really?
Yeah, maybe both. In the sense that there are candidates in the second row, but we can't guarantee their spot.
What does this tell you about the current crop of Six Nation or Home Nations captains if you don't think there's a standout captain to lead the Lions? Because Alan Wynne-Jones has only just been made
I think he would be the standout captain if you were just picking a captain. But he wouldn't be... He might not warrant a place in the side.
Yes, and I'm...
Your point is, so... Of those Six Nations teams, there is a fault with all of them. Like Hartley, there's an obvious potential fault there. Rory Best has got a few question marks over him. Laidlaw probably won't be on the plane. And then Alan Wynne-Jones is the best option. But if it was Warburton, there would be big question marks.
Yeah.
He's hardly played in the last couple of years.
Yeah, so maybe we're just in a real bad spell for Home Nations captains.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Eddie Jones actually said in a different interview this week that he thinks England don't have good enough leaders because they're too sheltered.
Hmm. Interesting, because Eddie Jones does have, so he's got Hartley as a captain, but then he has the wider leadership group, which includes Mike Brown, Billy Vunipola, Owen Farrell.
Well, related to this, and on that Guardian interview, Eddie Jones said, yeah, Dylan Hartley's our captain right now, but will he be captain in Japan? Maybe, well, good chance he won't be.
Hartley's been going through some grueling fitness tests, apparently. Have you heard about these?
I'm not surprised. He's not played in 8 weeks.
So England set him up with these fitness tests to replicate Test match rugby. I can't tell you exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Because most fitness tests, they are brutal, but they're only kind of between 5 and 15 minutes long. But you're talking about effectively an 80-minute fitness
test.
I'm
not sure it goes for 80 minutes.
Well, if that's the only way you can, at least 60 minutes.
Yeah, it isn't 80 minutes. I'm pretty sure of that. But, you know, the intensity is going to be pretty massive. Because he wouldn't stay on for 80 minutes, would he?
Yeah, well, he'd stay on for 60. He'd do 40 and then 20.
Sounds horrendous, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Does he get a break after 40?
Yeah. If you're going to replicate it, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
And at what point in the replication is there a... I don't know, is there a little bit of rubber he has to go and bite down on?
Well, yeah. Do you remember Men in Black, where they're going through the shooting range and every now and again, like, a child would pop up or, like, an old woman would be crossing the road? That's exactly what you'd have to do with Dylan Hartley.
Yeah, and I think the test is, if he does knock
referee
off...
referee pops up, does he go... Yeah. F you, ref.
Or, you know, a woman child pop up and he clotheslines him. And he's there to tempt him rather than anything else.
Sean O'Brien's big head with a massive target on it.
But it's been actively rude to him. Yeah, that's a great test for him.
That is the only real way to replicate Test match rugby.
Maybe the replication of Test match rugby that he's doing is he's just sitting in a room for 80 minutes with...
banned.
People coming in trying to wind him up constantly, and he has to keep his heart rate at resting level. Anyway.
Oh, dear.
So Eddie Jones said Hartley will probably start. I don't think there's any real surprises. The Mike Williams one is interesting. I guess it's... we talked about this before, but I guess it says everything about Eddie Jones. He knows what he wants from a position.
Yes.
And he kind of... he's his own man, and he doesn't care what anyone else thinks. And... sometimes he'll go out on a whim. He said in this Guardian interview, sorry to keep referring to it, but it's really good. He mentioned that he thinks players perform best and will get to the required level to win a World Cup by having something to overcome or something to prove. So he talked about having an affinity with players or liking players who have had some hardship in their life.
Yes.
Be that parental, be that... well, and he, so he made reference to Mike Williams. He said, one of the reasons I really like him and I've taken a punt on him, and he used those words, is because his family got thrown off of their farm in Zimbabwe and he's earning money now to send back to them. So the fact that he has that kind of deep-rooted need to be good is one of the things Eddie Jones likes
about
him.
So presumably you don't want Mike Williams to play? Because he's a project player / non-English qualifying residency guy.
As a principle, I don't like project players, but Zimbabwe's it's kind of a different case, but that doesn't get away from the 5-year residency thing.
Okay.
Zimbabwe don't have a national team, but anyway. But the point is, Eddie Jones was kind of saying, yeah, maybe there are players that are on paper are more deserving, or on merit are more deserving of a spot, but I think Mike Williams, because of those hardships, might get to where I need him to get to come Japan.
Someone made a really interesting point. I think it was... Who was the Japan coach prior to Eddie Jones?
Don't know.
Was it someone rather large, I think, in a New Zealander?
Someone rather large and a New Zealander.
But they were making the point that Eddie Jones in Japan...
Thomas Waldrop.
Yeah. Was it John...
Charlie Falmaina.
I'm trying to think who it is now. John Mitchell?
Ben Taufa Fanua.
Oh, forget it. No,
Steve Hansen? Steve Hansen?
No, well, the point being with this is that the previous coach, because he was a big bloke, liked to get the biggest blokes possible for Japan and try and make him into good rugby players. Because Eddie Jones was naturally a smaller bloke, he likes to get good rugby players.
That's suggesting
and turn them in, you know, get them in the gym.
Total like Donald Trump levels of narcissism. You're just creating a team in your own image.
Yeah, I guess it is. But yeah, that's what Eddie Jones likes. Players who are naturally good, but he can then work them hard, because that's exactly what he was, an undersized hawker.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the Wales team?
Yes. Well, go on. You're a Welshman, JB. What did you make of the Welsh squad?
What do I think of the Welsh squad? Well, I don't know anything about Welsh rugby. That's the first caveat. So I'll only talk about the players in the Premiership who have been selected. Thomas Young is exciting. I think everyone who watches Wasps can see that. But ultimately, I'm not even sure if he'd start for Wasps if everyone's fit. So, you know, this could be a lot of fuss about nothing. Owen Williams is interesting because he gives you a lot of options, particularly off the bench, but doesn't really merit a starting berth, in my opinion. He doesn't do anything particularly better than anyone else. He's very well-rounded. Is he a centre? Is he a 10? Well, he's probably more of a 10. He can do a job at centre, but we've already got centre.
I'm going to put it out there. He wouldn't get in another Six Nations squad.
Well, who does he remind you of? That's what I always think. Do you, when you look at a player, who is he most like? I think he's kind of like a less good version of Owen Farrell. He's that sort of player.
Yeah, Toby Flood.
That's a great one.
A less good version of Toby Flood.
No, a better version of Toby Flood. A less good version of Owen Farrell.
Yeah, I think he is like that player, but yeah, considerably less good than Owen Farrell.
Mm.
Considerably.
So yeah, nothing to really get massively excited about. No. Was there someone else called up who?
They've freshened it up with a couple of younger names. I can see how, if you were trying to be optimistic ahead of the Six Nations as a Welsh man or woman, you might feel a little bit more enthused because the squad does seem to have been freshened up little bit. Keelan Giles hasn't made the squad. Alex Cuthbert has on the wing. It'd be one area. I think I'm right.
He must train.
Yeah.
He must be amazing in training. He must be like nothing you've ever seen.
Well, I think Gats might be doing a long con. I think, you know, eventually the master plan is going to appear and there's going to be a law change that allows you to run off the pitch and back on and it not be a line out. Cuthbert is ready to go.
Yeah, he's got a unique set of skills in that case. So nothing too exciting. I'm a little bit down on Wales's chances of the Six Nations.
They always do badly in the autumn and better in the spring.
True. Oh, a bit of other news about Wales, and this is interesting. They have reclassified their, what was the phrase that I used? Capture team. So a capture team, for those of you that don't know, is the team that when you play for, you are automatically registered for that country.
The lowest level of performance you represent your nation at which point you are committing to being, that being your nation that you will play at senior level.
So for instance,
which is the second highest level that team puts out.
Yeah. So for instance, England have Saxons, there's the Wolfhounds for Ireland.
No,
is there?
Irish Wolfhounds aren't.
Yeah.
Is that their A
team?
Yeah,
that's their A team, the Wolf Puppies.
I'm sure we've done a quiz on them.
The Wolf Puppies are their under-20s. The Wolf Hounds are their A team.
I don't know what Scotland do. I don't know what France do. But I do know Wales A, by the way, inspirational name, Wales A, will now be the capture team.
What could it be?
The Dragons.
Wales Dragons, yeah.
Guess them.
Leakes, the Welsh Leakes, yeah. Fiji, they select their Sevens team.
Oh, do they?
So Tuisova, by playing for the Olympics, tied himself, which is a good thing, tied himself to.
See, I don't like this. I don't like this one bit. I don't even like the idea of capture teams.
So because Wales didn't have an A team, it was their under-20s side.
Yes.
Correct.
And now, I think, one of you might have to correct me, I think they're getting fed up of lads not playing for the under-20s because they...
To keep their options open.
Yes, I think so, which is why they went for the A team.
Which is why they went and found players like Shane Howarth back in the day.
Yeah.
A New Zealander very, very, very tenuous links to being a...
It's interesting this comes up when it does, because...
Oh, there's been a wider conversation about residency rules.
Yes, and also Paul Turner, who was the ex-Dragons coach and coach of Sale and a few others, who's done quite well when he has been a coach, is now in some role with the WRU hunting down players who've got Welsh heritage or Welsh qualified, particularly in England. I think there's something like 50-odd players.
Hmm.
Yeah, so like,
I like the way you said hunting down, like it's a covert op.
Man.
Yeah,
the hardest prey. something like that. I'm actually against the whole idea of capture teams. I think it's a nonsense. You either are good enough to play rugby at the highest level or you're not. And the reason I'm against it is because I can imagine a scenario like New Zealand, say, and they just have this capture team and they put through a load of one cappers, particularly Islanders, and then that's them done. And I think it's exactly the same with Wales. They're just basically trying to cap as many people as they can.
For the record, you want... I'm trying to think of a good example. I'll tell you what, I've got a great example of a player you'll love.
Mm-hmm.
England Saxon.
Yeah.
Miles Benjamin.
Oh, what a guy.
Let's say Miles Benjamin pulled on that white rose for the England Saxons.
Yeah.
The second side of that nation. Played in a Saxons Churchill Cup. Played in a Saxons whatever.
I think we're getting it.
Yeah, okay. So he sung that national anthem. And then he realises, age 26, 27, my incredible rucking technique is not going to be appreciated at Test match level.
Okay, well,
I'm my grandma's Welsh. Now I'll play for Wales. Okay, well, I do not know. I'm not having that.
But there's a few flaws in your argument here. Number one, his rucking skills would be appreciated at international level. So you need to take that back immediately.
But the argument that you put forward before is probably a good one, because there are a lot of people who are New Zealand qualified, so grew up in New Zealand, but of Samoan or Tongan or Fijian heritage. Mm. Who could be just churned through the Maori,
yeah, exactly.
And then never become eligible for Fiji or for Samoa. So that,
and
when you put it like that, I don't have an issue with it in principle, but that scenario is a little bit concerning, because there'll be loads of players who've played for the Maori who will never get an All Blacks cap, but then have completely ruled themselves out of playing for another nation.
Yeah, so, and the Fiji point is really interesting, right? Because Fiji use their sevens team. Fiji sevens, I don't know if you know this, it's serious business. So they're not in on the sevens circuit just to give up caps willy-nilly. Whereas the Wolfhounds can only really play the Saxons. They were for a long time the two only A teams. And those caps are pretty much worthless. They can give out them to whoever they want, whenever they want. They can have development tours. They can have all sorts of things. So when England are off in Australia, they had a tour down South Africa. It is important to the lads that went, I guess. But if you're not a wealthy nation, you basically can't do this. You're either good enough to play international rugby, or you're not. And the only caps that should count are your senior caps.
I think this could be solved by something that you've proposed before, which is the players can travel. They can go from if they're capped by tier one, they can move down to a tier two.
Yep.
But if they're capped by tier two, they can't move up to a tier one nation.
And there should be maybe a buffer in terms of years between the two, because I don't want it's just 1 year you're doing this, next year you're doing that. But so that's the capture team element, and Wales now have Wales A.
Yep.
which is good to see that they've, you know, it's.
If I'm going to make a prediction,
a strong union having an A side, I think it's important.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
What's your prediction?
But my prediction will be this will be full of English exiles.
Wales A.
Yeah.
People with English. But it'll be.
So you think they're trying to. Yeah. So you think they're trying to capture guys that are.
Like
in their 20s, but beyond under 20s.
Yeah, like Thomas Francis would have definitely played A team.
Yeah.
You know, that's who they're. He's got
a Welsh grandmother or something.
Donnie Prop.
Yeah.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah, he's always been eligible.
Yeah, so that's what they'll be doing. So. You know, given the choice, I think when Donny Prop was growing up, he's almost certainly going to be pulling on the white rose if given the choice.
Probably, yeah.
When Gatland runs out of tight heads and goes and says, you know, do you fancy a game? That's absolutely fine, because he's good enough, he's eligible. But what I don't
he's eligible.
Yeah, no, yeah. But what I don't like is the idea that this A team is going to go around hoovering up players for no other reason than just to make sure
they're Welsh. Just to cap them, yeah.
I get exactly your frustration there. Broader point then, because the residency laws, rules, whatever, have been discussed. England have indicated that the RFU, if it isn't made a general rule by World Rugby, England would impose their own rule where it's a 5-year residency rather than the 3-year residency it has been, that has seen players like Nathan Hughes, Shontaine Harpy, mm-hmm. Ricky Flutie and others in the past represent England. France have already done this with 5 years.
Have they actually? Is it official? Have they voted on it?
I believe it's going through. Anyway, they've indicated. So basically, their posture. There's going to be a World Rugby vote on residency rules. France have said they want 5 years. England have said they want 5 years. Wales have come out and said they want 5 years. Scotland have said they will oppose it, which I think's to benefit them, and that's fine. That's their prerogative, but I think it's to the detriment of rugby. So here's the wider point: would 5-year residency or 3 years residency as it is, or something else? I think you know where my rule is.
Very much so.
It's not an EDL, JB, despite what
EDL.
You say. It's not English. No, English.
You just
English
want to make rugby great again.
Births for English.
Yeah, you know, English jobs for English people. I hate him.
It's the integrity of what that rose or what that crest means to you, and I as good as he is, I would have preferred if we were living in a time and if rugby was in a place where Nathan Hughes was playing for Fiji, where CJ Stander wasn't
caught short by the rules in South Africa.
Yeah.
Okay, so my answer is long and dull and boring, so I'll give you a very short one.
Great.
First of all, I would like the world that you portray where everyone plays for the country of their birth or wherever they feel that they're from. If you feel that you're from Wales and you happen to grow up in Scotland...
Or where they've been patriated to, they've got a passport and they're a citizen.
Whatever it is. I'm with you. I don't like the cynicism in just moving around. Providing it's an equal playing field. And what I mean by that is I have no interest in saying to the Fijian unions or the Samoan unions, yeah, have all of your players back, but then pay them 400 quid. Because ultimately, 400 quid per game. Because ultimately, it's a professional game. And I'm just worried that, for instance, say South African players who aren't getting in the South African team for political reasons, then can't come over here and make a good living. And you're going to see some of the best players in the world not playing the best games in the world, just because of nationalistic laws combined with their own unions either being overly political, or in the case of the Fiji Union or the Tonga Union or Samoan Union, ripping off their players. I wouldn't want to play for any of those unions. And that's why the lads don't, because they only get paid £400 a game, and it's an absolute scandal.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So as long as the playing field isn't really fair, I'm not interested.
Well, and again, in a utopia, that would completely be the case. I guess my perspective is, and my point of view is, my objective is to have the next World Cup and subsequent World Cups being the strongest that they can possibly be, with as many teams competing as they possibly can, and big, rich unions, land-grabbing players, and like Ireland have done it in the way that Ireland have gone about it, I particularly don't like with these.
But to be fair,
and France as well, these quote-unquote project players.
France are the worst.
Yeah, France are the worst. Ireland, I don't like the way they've done it as well. And I worry that what might happen, even with the 5 years, is now you'll get agents going and scouting for 16, 17-year-olds.
Yes, that is exactly what is going to happen. They're going to be recruiting these players younger, and particularly from the Pacific Island nations, where they'll be less able to be moved away from their families, or less able to cope with being moved away from their families. Potentially, it could be an absolute disaster.
Yeah, so my only objective is stopping the flow of talent from poorer to richer unions.
Because that
is what's happening.
And I guess is how you proportion blame. You proportion blame on big, rich unions, going out and grabbing up players. I don't. I proportion it on the smaller unions who are basically fraudulently wasting cash
I'm actually not apportioning blame. I'm just trying to come up with
big rich unions.
No, I just said the facts are
you said big rich unions.
The lure of cash.
Yeah, of course it is, because it's a professional sport.
Yeah, no,
it's
I get that.
Absolute right to earn as much as they can.
My perspective is principle. Phil, let me guess, he's going to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. So if this argument was we should drown all newborn puppies, and you said we shouldn't drown any newborn puppies, one thing would be clear: not all the puppies would live, but not all the puppies would die.
Well, we can't kill all of the puppies, Jay.
Where do you stand on this, Phil?
I'm almost think it's arbitrary whether it's 3 years or it's 5 years. I think the most important thing is having a clear objective position, whether it is 3 or 5, I don't really mind. But creating the level playing field, I think, is very important because it clearly isn't. Because Nathan Hughes is a great example. He is playing for England partly because of the cash, but also partly because the Fijian Union, they don't organise anything.
No.
It's as described by Dan Leo on the Rugby Dungeon, it is a bit shambolic the way some of the island unions
Here's a fact.
Are organised.
Nathan Hughes would have to play 55 times for Fiji to earn one England match fee.
Well, I would actually go to say he'd have to do more than that, because in a lot, I've read in some instances they're paying for their own transport and accommodation. So they're actually losing money to play for their country.
Let's be clear, these are not poor unions. They are very well funded, and yet what they're doing is pretty fraudulent. They're just embezzling money. So as long as that is going on,
yeah,
back to my short answer, which is taking me 10 minutes, I'm not really interested in the residency rules. I think it should be almost a bit more of a free-for-all because I want to see the best players playing at the highest level of the game.
I can't agree with that. Mm. But you've got to have it on an objective level, whether it's 3, 4, 5. I think it is a little bit arbitrary.
Of course.
Providing you get a level playing field, paying the same money, the same level of admin, same level of organisation.
Yep. You can accuse this me of this being nationalism in some way. I think it's more a kind of romantic view. This is the boy that started watching rugby. Music in the background. The boy that started watching rugby in me loved the international matchups and stuff, and I just think that integrity and seeing guys like Jason Leonard when I was a kid singing, like belting out "God Save the Queen," or the
Augustine Creevy
in recent years crying as he sings that national anthem.
The Georgians,
that's part of the romance of international sport for me. It's not even about how good your team is. Yeah, it's like part of that.
And I think if everything was completely level, I am completely with you in principle. Facts are, been pragmatic. It's just it isn't level.
Yeah,
I did a bit of work on this just to understand the position we're in at the moment. So I went back through the squads in the.
Of course he did. I love it. Me and JB just turn up and chat. Phil.
Well, if I'm going to form an opinion, I need some facts behind it.
Why? That sounds unnecessary. That sounds like hard work.
So I went through the 2015 World Cup squads and tried to work out who qualified through the three-year eligibility law. And so one of the points mooted about this new five-year law is anyone under 18 wouldn't necessarily count for it, which is your point about players coming younger. So because you have to define it somewhere, I've said three-year eligibility unless you arrive in that country under 16. For example, Pocock, who travelled from Zimbabwe at age 14, he wouldn't class as a three-year eligibility rule player.
Telupe Faletau.
Faletau, the Vunipolas.
Yeah,
they were 10-12 when they travelled across. So how many players... So I've only done it for Tier 1, because I think Tier 1's more important. Yeah. How many players out of 330 who played in that World Cup followed the eligibility route?
I'm thinking Japan will have a few.
Well, they're not tier one.
Oh, not tier one.
Yeah, okay. Japan would be the highest tier two, definitely. Because all the other tier twos wouldn't really have any.
Okay, tier one, I will go out of 330 players, I will go for 18.
Jay?
46.
Tim, you're almost bob on. 16.
It's not even a massive problem.
5%. And then you go through the countries. So England didn't have any. Macko and Billy were there. Hartley obviously wasn't there. Nathan Hughes wasn't eligible. And like the I think it was a Guardian article listed before Nathan Hughes, the last players were Shontay and Happy, Ricky Flutie, Hendry Foray, Leslie Vianicolo. So England
Stuart
don't,
Abbott,
maybe Stuart Abbott, but England don't
Mike
have
Cap.
England don't have a great track record with doing. They've never brought any brilliant players.
Mike Catt would be the best.
Was he as a kid or
grew up in Pretoria?
Yeah, but when did he travel across?
Great question. Don't know.
We leave the facts to you, Phil.
Wales. Do you know how many they had?
Wales's approach is quite often to get people who have, which is perfectly reasonable. I'm not complaining. They're not aren't Welsh, quote unquote. But have a Welsh relative in ancestor. Three. So Wales, no, because only 16 altogether. I'll go two.
So Wales had five people not born in Wales,
okay,
but they all had Welsh ancestry.
Yeah.
So none of them classed as the three-year eligibility route. New Zealand?
Two.
None.
Right.
Partly because they... So Fekita and Naholo would be the two who they came across as kind of secondary school children to play for colleges. Australia had one in Spate.
France must have had a few.
France were the worst offenders. Australia had one. Scotland had three. Because Scotland had a few. So Scotland had Visser, Strauss and WP Nell.
And Scotland are, so far, of the home unions that have spoken up about this, Scotland are the Home Nations Union who have said that they want it to stay as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that suggests. They did have, Scotland also had three who had Scottish ancestry in Maitland, Dave Denton and Blair Cowan. Mm. Ireland had three and France had five. Winnie Antonio, they had Bernard Leroux, Rory Cockott, Noah Nakatasi and Scott Spedding.
Yeah.
And obviously now they've got Vaca Tower.
And so Teddy Thomas is wasn't in the squad.
Not in the squad. I think he's French as well.
Well, by World Rugby are going to talk about this, so it will be something we can talk about at a later date.
Definitely. Yep. Definitely.
Where are we at, gentlemen?
And we're at 1:17.
One hour 17.
Yeah.
Not one minute 17.
You know what I mean?
We don't need to talk about games coming up in this podcast.
No,
because nothing really is happening.
Nothing really is happening.
So there's two more things on my agenda.
Yeah, go on.
One light-hearted, a little bit, which is Stephen Larkham coming out of retirement. Age 42.
Oh, I saw this.
To play in the Brisbane Tens.
Yeah. There is a bit of a push in Australia for Tens rugby for some reason.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of a gateway drug.
Gateway drug. What if you're 42?
Well, no, not for Stephen Larkham, no. But it does generate some
gateway,
interest.
Gateway will be the description of his defence. He was never the best defender, even when he was in his pomp.
But it got me thinking, is there anyone who you'd like to see come out of retirement, either recently retired or long retired? Because Larkham's probably been retired
And the thing is, the right age to do it, if you could do it. Stephen Ferris.
Ferris is one, he's on my list. If
but is he also on your list for people to come out of retirement?
Yay! Banter.
You love Stephen Ferris.
He's so good. He's cruelly taken from us.
Yeah.
He's only 31. He'd have another.
I think Richard Cockerell. That's what he should do with his because he's now leaner. He's into his yoga. He'd be more of a Phil Greening kind of hooker.
Did you check out
than a Richard Cockerell kind of hooker?
The Alistair Eakin interview with him. Yeah. Very, very good.
Tiger in Toulon.
Mm. I think they should stop calling him the Tiger in Toulon. They just remove all references to Leicester when referring to him. Though.
Yeah.
Well,
because otherwise he's going to hang
the rooster,
hang
the rooster
on his neck,
in Toulon.
Like.
The rooster in Toulon.
Yeah,
Cockerell.
Fine, perfect.
Big cock in Toulon.
That's right.
What I'd go for. The rooster, yeah, rooster's good. I just can't help thinking that Cockerell and Worcester just feel like the perfect fit. But anyway,
yeah,
we'll see in due course. He's not doing a bad job there.
Anyone else you'd get out of retirement?
Yeah, I'm sure there
are.
I'm
trying to think of someone who's just got massive. He's
retired. Well, Duncan Bell came
massive.
Out of retirement and he was looking rather large.
Yeah, Steve Thompson as well.
Yeah, Steve Thompson. Well, he retired because that neck injury
got up
massive.
To 22 stone.
Then went back and played and shed it all.
Yeah.
And then scored that incredible try in that charity game.
When he got massive again.
When he was massive again,
I'm just trying to think. Just,
I want to see Lewis Moody playing under current tackle laws.
No.
A guy who retired too early and could definitely still play, and I was kind of hoping he would do, but he didn't. Is Johnny Wilkinson? I think he's only like 35.
Boys.
36.
I want to have a $6 million man or RoboCop type operation, and Jacques Berger to be given a whole new skeleton.
Yes.
Made out of carbon fibre.
Yeah.
Set him free.
Well, what did he today? He is drinking beers. I think he's hunting, and he's in the Kalahari Desert camping.
Yeah.
He's on his Twitter. Obviously not that deep in the desert if you've got phone signal. Just saying, Jack. Watch out for that.
Wilkinson's 37.
Yeah, so maybe he did retire at the right time then.
Tim, you've seen him up close. What about Hugo Monya? He's 33. He's in pretty good shape.
Pretty good shape. Yeah, still got a scary rig. He could still do a job. On the 10 circuit, he could do a decent job.
And how about... Here's one I was thinking of. A former Leicester prop who is probably now... He's probably spent the last 4 years...
Darren Morris?
Not Darren Morris. Not Graham Rowntree, who looks like he's about 100 years old. He spent the last 4 years stacking cows.
Perry Freshwater. Oh, Julian White.
Julian White.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine...
How did I get Perry Freshwater for Julian White?
I don't know. I imagine Julian White could still hold up a scrum pretty well. I think he's about 42...
Well, Flats is only like 30 something.
Yeah, he's about 35, 36.
Yeah, mate. I mean, that's prime
Julian White,
age.
World Cup winner. I've just thought there's one other thing we should briefly talk about. Arsgate, Tom Arsgate. Yes. We talked about it last week. So as we went on the podcast last week, it was starting to mushroom on Twitter, but we couldn't talk about it officially. It came out. Tom Arsgate spoke. He's been sacked by his club, Sale Sharks. The position of Bristol is, they say, yes, Tom and Luke met each other at the Bristol Team Hotel.
They're brothers.
The night before the game. They're brothers. They live 250 miles apart. That's perfectly normal. It's a standard thing. They didn't talk about anything which gave Sale any competitive advantage. We're totally satisfied there was nothing, no wrongdoing by Bristol or Luke Arscott, their player. Sale have a very, very different perspective. So we don't know the ins and outs because nothing specific's been released, but they've sacked Tom Arscott on the strength of what some of Steve Diamond says, some of his senior players said to him. QJB defending Steve Diamond to the hilt.
It's such a tricky one, is it?
Tricky one because you're trying to get business out of Sale Sharks.
We know very little about this outside of the fact that Sale went to the RFU. I'm not even sure if Sale went to the RFU, actually. But the RFU...
Well, they didn't want to, but they had to.
Yeah, something...
Because of due process, you have to let them know when there's an internal investigation like this.
Right, okay. And then it's the RFU that announced that this was happening. Something's clearly gone on.
Well, no, is the RFU just... sort of facilitate? Did they? No, they just.
No, the
RFU only announced what Sale were doing. RFU had nothing to do with the internal investigation, the internal meeting, and all the rest of it. All the sacking.
Funny, because I'm pretty sure that they did.
Oh really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's an RFU investigation. Mind you, why would it be?
No, it's not.
Why would it be? That's what I was told.
I don't think it is.
But yeah, that wouldn't make any sense, would it? Because RFU don't.
I think they had to tell them. They didn't want to because the RFU. Are duty bound to then release a statement that this is happening or has happened.
Do you want me to let's speculate because it's more fun than facts.
Go on then.
I mean, the understanding.
Oh no, let's speculate. Tom Arscott did reveal in-depth tactical plans, and he said, "What we're doing, Luke, you get back and tell Bristol that what we're going to do is knock on the ball at every opportunity and score hardly any points."
Miss all of our kicks.
Yeah, listen out for call. It's called Crab One. That's when we crab that sideways. Crossfield kick. That's
Denny ball.
Denny ball. Yeah. That's usually a try. obviously said something. Now, how substantial it is, I don't know. Do you know a single back? In fact, I'll ask Phil. Phil's a very conscientious guy. What were the Sedgley Park calls when you were playing for the line-out?
The line-out?
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, Johnny May doesn't even know how to pack down on a blindside flank.
This is exactly my point.
We had a couple of lineouts which would be hit up the only ones that I knew, but this isn't the actual lineout.
No, the lineout calls.
Oh, no idea. Absolutely no idea.
I'm not sure Tom Arsenal's going to know that. So I doubt his lineout calls, unless he's gone out of his way to do it.
Well, in that game on New Year's Day, Sale did do a couple of like 11 man. Mauls from lineouts, which it was speculated could have been what Tom had mentioned to Luke. Oh, we got a plan for you, some 11-man line. I'm only speculating, but on if it was those 11-man lineouts, for example, the first one, Dan Toohey got yellow carded, and then they scored a try from the next one.
Yeah, but
so it's not good. They're not using that intelligence wisely.
Yeah, no. But if he has told them, it isn't about how much effect it had on the game. It's the fact that he did it, and. I can't imagine for the life of me. I mean, we've speculated before the show, and only joking. Oh, Dimes wants to save some money. He wants someone off the salary cap. Or that just isn't the case, is it? Because he's going to need.
Can't imagine that.
No, well, it isn't, mate. Because look at me getting all defensive. It isn't, mate.
I'm not saying it is.
Look here, pal.
I'm not saying it is.
And this is why they've already got one of the smallest squads in the league anyway, and they're going to need all the help they can possibly get. Arscott, for all his character flaws, allegedly. Isn't a terrible player, and he would be useful. I can't see the saving of half a year's salary being worth it. He must have done something, and if he hadn't done something, Sale would have been incredibly, incredibly careless, because you don't fire someone for no reason.
So that's the thing for me.
Yeah.
Sale must... Right, Steve Diamond has got enough legal issues to worry about. He's got the TJ Ioane thing, and he's got the Denny Solomona thing, and the... Cillian Killian Willis thing.
Oh, it could be a couple of costly lawsuits potentially. We don't know the ins and outs of those. I wonder if those might cost a few quid.
You just imagine the Sale lawyer or whoever they've got on retainer.
Yeah, we don't need another one.
You what, Steve? Just laughing down the phone. Yeah. Cash register in the background. And do you want me to bill by the hour or fixed fee?
Well, just like head in his hands. No, surely he's got all the facts. Surely he's got some evidence of this. This heinous crime, this breach of contract.
Any evidence, Steve? No, he just did it, didn't he?
Yeah, I know someone's told me he did it. I know he did it.
Talk about it, weren't they?
Oh, well, I don't know if we'll ever actually hear or see any detail on this one, but there you
go. Of course you will. We have to now.
The only way we'll hear any detail is if there is some kind of employment tribunal and Arscott sues for wrongful dismissal.
So two things, right? If you never hear from Tom Arscott ever again, assume he's guilty of sin.
Yes, correct. Without any facts, but assume guilt.
Assume, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're a highly paid professional rugby player. I mean, this is a moneymaker. If we do hear from Tom Arscott again, then it gets juicy because they're going to have to produce evidence.
Well, on that bombshell, I think we're done for the pod.
I think we are.
I think we are. We've covered off some big topics. If you've got anything you want to add or any thoughts you have or any questions, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, the Facebook page, don't forget, Facebook, Egg Chasers, Rugby Podcast, and we have an event page there for our trip to Romania, weekend of the 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th of March, where Romania play Georgia. Tickets go on sale. We've spoken to, we have friends at World Rugby. So tickets...
We're kind of big deals.
We know some people have said, oh, but we can't get tickets. Tickets will be available closer to time. You will be able to get them. And in the weekend in Bucharest, you will be able to get there cheaply, live there and drink there cheaply, watch rugby there. We've already scoped out some venues where you can watch Six Nation games all together. We've already scoped out a venue and we're going to do a live podcast there, but we'd love to have you along. We're looking into transport to the ground so we can all go together.
And there's already about 50 people signed up.
There's already about 50 people signed up. The more the merrier. It's going to be a really cracking time.
Gay old time.
And for probably the less of a price of going to see your home nation play.
Yeah, when I work out the actual cost of my flights to go over there and my accommodation, I'll express it to you in Twickenham pints. So what was it, £8 a Twickenham pint?
It's £5 for a pack of pork scratchings or something ridiculous.
I'm sure it's about £8.
It's about £5 or £5.50 maybe. It was during the World Cup anyway.
So, Rugby Podcast, Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast on Facebook. Find the event page. Get involved. We'll answer any questions you have in the meantime. But get those flights booked up. Come and join us. Let us know you're there.
Own Cornerstone.
Oh, and of course, if you haven't already got a Cornerstone razor, it's the best razor on the market. They help us make this podcast and they give you an amazing offer with us. So you can get for £4 an engraved free aluminium shaft razor, precision engineered, award winning. You get that in a beautiful presentation box, £4. You get that and you get 6 razors with your first purchase and anything else you want as well from cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
Egg10 at checkout.
Top work, Phil.
Thank you, Tim.
The top work, JB.
Thank you, Tim.
See you next time.
Bye bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never-ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.